When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Latin American History Podcast. 100th episode special. A history of Latin American music. Today we've reached a milestone, the podcast's 100th episode. When we reached the 50th episode, I wanted to do something to mark it. At that point, we were in the depths of the pandemic, and people were looking for things to do inside the house during lockdowns. I decided to make an episode about Latin American film, as this both fitted the bill perfectly, and because the colour and energy which makes Latin America so great, in my opinion, goes way beyond audio narratives about history. Film helps to capture it. Music is, of course, another medium through which the liveliness of the region is encapsulated. It's everywhere in Latin America. You can hardly walk 30 seconds down the road without it blaring from a house or a car window, or without it being played by a street hawker, protest march, or busker. It's one of the things which first drew me there, and it makes up the bulk of the music I still listen to today. Many of those films I mentioned in that 50th episode tell you something about Latin America's history, as well as its contemporary reality. Its music is no different. There are an enormous number of genres, but each are the product of historical forces which have shaped the cultures from which they are born. This episode, then, is some light relief from the standard episodes, and so it incorporates a beginner's guide to Latin American music. But I also want to talk about the history and culture which created Latin America's musical genres. There is a name for the academic study of music and how it fits into the wider culture: ethnomusicology. It's a subgenre of anthropology, and I would like to have studied it in an ideal world, but anthropology itself is obscure enough and already has limited enough job prospects. Ethnomusicologists look at the history of music, but also its function within society. Often its purpose is not just to provide entertainment, but to fulfill important needs when it comes to things like religion, social cohesion, or ritual. An ethnomusicologist will often need to develop a deep knowledge of how music is written and structured to explain how it fulfills these functions. I am neither an ethnomusicologist or a musician, but hopefully I can incorporate some knowledge of these genres and still make the episode entertaining. Now, there's a problem when it comes to making an episode about music. This is an audio medium, but I can't actually play any of the music I'm talking about because of copyright laws. It would be great to have songs playing in the background as I talk, but unfortunately that's impossible. Instead, I've collected them up and put them into a series of YouTube playlists, which you can find on the YouTube page of the Latin American History Podcast. All the songs I mention and recommend throughout these two episodes are on them, as well as lots more. And yes, there was so much to talk about that this is going to be a two-parter. As with most aspects of Latin American culture, its music is so special because it is a blend of cultural influences. These influences come mainly from three continents: the Americas themselves, Africa, and Europe. All three of these continents are extremely diverse. The indigenous music of the Amazon, for example, is very different to that of the High Andes or Mesoamerica. Spanish and Portuguese musical styles share common roots with that of Germany and Poland, yet the music of these two countries is also very different to that of Iberia. And surprisingly, they have had quite an influence on some Latin music. Finally, Africa is an extremely diverse place, and the musical traditions from that continent, which have made their way over to the Americas, are drawn from places thousands of miles apart. It is there that we will start. Not all Latin music has an African base, but much of it does. And these include pretty much all the genres which people first think of when they think of Latin music. The rhythms which underpin salsa, cumbia, samba, and even the pretty European-sounding tango all grew out of African origins. If you break down the elements which make up these genres, you can find them mirrored in music played from Mali to Angola. Now, I love African music as much as Latin music, precisely because they share so much in common. But at the same time, you can hear the differences which the centuries of separation have created. Alongside the YouTube playlists organized by Latin American region or country, I've also made one of African music, so that if you want to, you can see what I mean. Today, most Afro-Latin music is secular. It's made for entertainment, for dancing, and for having fun too. The same is now true in Africa. However, much of its musical tradition developed for religious reasons. It was, and still is, played during rituals, and this has influenced how it has developed. African religion is not my area of expertise, but often its pre-Christian and pre-Islamic faiths are intensely communal affairs. They are also usually connected by a belief that interaction with gods and spirits is a daily occurrence. You can petition them for things, and they in turn regularly influence life in the human world. Anthropologists have long recognized that as well as their stated purpose, to interact with the gods, religious ritual performs an important role in social cohesion and maintaining community bonds. This is just as true in places like Northern Europe or the USA, where church services traditionally bring people together. The shared experience of playing, listening, and dancing to music during rituals is an important part of West African society. On top of this, the pounding drums are used to bring deities down to the ceremony. There is a belief that these deities can possess people taking part as a way of enacting their power and will. These rituals have been brought over to Latin America, almost in their complete and original form. If you ever witness or watch a video online of a candomblé, umbanda, santeria, or voodoo ceremony, you will see what I mean. You can also see echoes of them, however, in some of the African-American churches of the USA, where people sometimes become overcome, speak in tongues, or writhe on the floor. The drums and dancing are part of the creation of an atmosphere where these possessions are more likely to occur. The percussion is loud and the rhythms are frantic. The communal atmosphere and the dancing help make you feel like you are part of something bigger and more powerful. You can begin to lose yourself, and you can start to see how this creates space for a god or goddess to take your body over. Often the drumming will last for hours and will build and build to create a feeling of climax. If you listen to Latin music, particularly live, but if not, then at least really loud, you can see that this legacy still exists. Salsa, in particular, often builds to a crescendo. The drums are hypnotic, and the songs as a whole are full of energy. Although Latin music is not often religious, it still possesses that communal aspect. People dance together and talk to strangers. This is what I mean when I say that so much of Latin music has an African base. There are so many parallels, direct comparisons, and evolutions from West African religious music. So how is this effect created? What are the specific musical techniques which can be found on both continents? If you listen to the percussion patterns, these Afro-Latin rhythms are all different. Slightly minimalist samba beat, for example, is very different to the shuffling cumbia. Despite their differences, however, In the background, they share common features. One of these is syncopation. Now, I have to re-emphasize here that I'm not a musician. I don't fully understand all the complex techniques and structures which are used, and I'm unable to explain them to the level of somebody who studies music. Even if I could and did, explaining them in precise detail would probably be fairly boring to non-musicians listening. This section of the episode, then, is just a basic introduction to a couple of the concepts. Syncopation is a catch-all word, which refers to many different ways of messing around with the standard rhythm. Take what is probably the most common and simple beats used in the West, 4-4. The drums and percussion are based around a pattern which goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Usually the 1 and the 3 are emphasized. The bass drum will often play on beats 1 and 3, while a snare might be used on beats 2 and 4. If you're using syncopation, you might put the emphasis on beats 2 and 4, like how guitar chords are played on the upbeats in reggae music. You might miss a beat or beats entirely, or you might make sounds between them. When you have many percussionists, as you often do in Latin music, all using different syncopation techniques, not to mention the other non-percussion musicians and vocalists joining in, the simple rhythm which might underpin the song can become almost unrecognizable as it's played in complex and rich ways. Syncopation is not a technique unique to Africa and Latin America. It can be found all over the world, and it's sometimes used in Western music. Late medieval European composers used it, as did the Rolling Stones in their song Satisfaction. It's not just how the rhythm is played and modified, however, which makes African and Latin music so distinctive and highly developed. It's also those bass rhythms themselves. Most are fiendishly complex. In fact, often several different rhythms are being played at once, something known in the music world as polyrhythms. As I mentioned a minute or two ago, much of the music played in the West is based on the 4-4 beat. There are exceptions, and you hear 3-3 a bit, but most songs you know and love are probably 4-4. I am, of course, simplifying. Drummers and producers in genres from rock to soul to hip-hop to whatever teenagers are listening to today do amazing things, and some genres like metal even utilize polyrhythms in a completely different way to Latin music. It's not that common, however. In the African and Latin tradition, one percussionist might keep to a 4-4, for example, while another is playing a 3-3 pattern. Yet another might be playing some obscure time signature never heard in Western music. Along with the syncopation, this creates a frenetic and rich percussion sound, which characterizes the music of these regions. When you have many musicians all doing sometimes wildly different things, you need some way of holding it all together and stopping it descending into a mess. In African and much Latin music, the way this is done is through the clave. Clave is a Spanish word. I don't know what they call it in West Africa, or even in Brazil, actually. The clave is usually associated with salsa and its related genres, but it does underpin many others. It's a short, repeated one-sound pattern, usually three beats followed by two, but sometimes this is reversed. You might even recognize it. It goes 1-2-3, 1-2, 1-2-3, 1-2. Or when reversed, 1-2, 1-2-3, 1-2, 1-2-3. Sometimes a percussion instrument will actually play one of these patterns. In salsa, often on the instrument which bears the same name. Often, however, it's not actually played, but instead it stays within the heads of the musicians. There may be musicians listening who can explain this better than me, but the basic idea is that the clave pattern forms a sort of spine around which the other rhythms can hang off. They might be playing something quite different, but each rhythm being played can be attached to the clave, so it links them all together. To be able to make music using this extremely complex system requires a lot of skill. A percussionist must be able to hear the clave if it's actually being played, or keep it in their head if it's not, at the same time as playing their own ever-changing rhythm, and not letting all the others being played simultaneously distract them. The clave is slightly different in Brazilian music. I would guess it must be slightly different in Portuguese Africa. It's formed from the same basic pattern, but it misses a beat to create the more minimalist sound you can hear most clearly in genres like bossa nova. Another African music feature, which is heard in many Latin genres, is the call and response. This is often utilized when it comes to singing, but also in the way different instruments interact with each other, or an instrument interacts with the singing. A melody will be sung or played, and then the backing singers or another instrument will play a corresponding one back, and then this duet will be repeated. In my opinion, the best example of this is Eddie Palmieri's Oyelo Que Te Conviene. This song is littered with call and responses. At the beginning, Eddie sings a phrase, followed by a short blast of horns, which will change after each of his phrases. As it builds, the backing singers repeat the catchy hook after which the song is named, over and over again, while Eddie improvises different lines in response. This is again part of that communal and participatory element of the African music tradition. The drummers might be highly skilled, but everyone can join in singing a simple refrain, and in doing so, they are beginning to give themselves up to the shared experience. Usually these calls and responses are repeated, and repetition is another key technique used to build tension. You can hear it in the guajillo, which has its origins in Cuba, and is a key part of salsa more generally. The guajillo is a repeated melody, played on the piano in most Cuban genres, and made from arpeggiated chords. It gives the music a driving sound. The use of repetition in this way creates energy, but it also frustrates. You expect it to progress, but it doesn't. Other instruments like percussion can be used to build the tension, ramping up in intensity, while the guajillo, or whichever repeated pattern is used depending on the genre, continues to stay the same. Eventually, it finally changes. The other instruments go all out, and this creates an ecstatic release, designed to draw participants in, and then to take them out of themselves when the release finally comes, to launch them into the communal shedding of tension. Oyelo Que Te Conviene is again a perfect example of this technique being used in non-religious Latin music. So too is the Brazilian percussionist Aitor Moreira's Samba de Flora. This song is completely different to Cuban music or the salsa of Eddie Palmieri. Yet it builds and builds, the piano playing a repetitive, catchy strain, the singer doing call and response with himself, the drums pounding away, until it all goes crazy at the end, and each instrumentalist seems to be improvising and making as much noise as they can, but somehow doing it in a way where it all comes together.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
A final less theoretical aspect of the African influence on Latin music takes the form of instruments. Most obvious are the drums and percussion, but the marimba is another extremely important contribution. It's very popular in Guatemala, where it's the national instrument, and is used to play things like European waltzes and create a sound which is neither African, European, or indigenous, again highlighting the hybrid nature of Latin music. The instrument also forms the basis of curralao. This genre grew up on Colombia's Pacific coast, and it is, in my opinion, the most African-sounding genre in Latin America. It hardly has any external influences, and can almost be heard somewhere in Mali or Senegal. The marimba is used to make beautiful, relaxing melodies, and the singing utilizes call-and-response techniques heavily. Some good examples include Grupo Socavones, Homenaje a Justino, and Grupo Bahia's El Curralao Me Llama. So let's talk about some of the other of these genres, and some of the social history which gave birth to them. As we'll see over the course of this episode, it's usually very hard to separate out the influences, and say that this genre is very African, this genre is very indigenous, this one, European. They were all on a spectrum of influences, and incorporate things from the three continents. This is what makes them Latin. That said, I need a way to structure these two episodes, and by making a rough generalization, this genre fits into the African category, this one into the European one. Grouping genres according to which inheritance they draw most deeply from is a good way of doing it. The ones we're dealing with in this episode, then, sit further over towards the African end of the spectrum. Now, if I had to pick one country which has contributed the most to Latin music, it would be extremely difficult. Brazil, Colombia, Puerto Rico, Mexico, and the Dominican Republic would all have to be considered. One of the strongest contenders, though, is without a doubt Cuba, because of the sheer number of genres that have developed there, and because of the debt which other genres owe to the island's musical traditions. The island's African population had been playing their ancestral music for centuries, and incorporating the other influences to which they were exposed. Eventually, in the far east of Cuba, these came together to form a genre, or perhaps a collection of related genres, known as son. The exact details are shrouded in mystery, but it's generally agreed that as musicians migrated to Havana, they were exposed to both their city counterparts, who had developed a slightly different sound, and a greater degree of Spanish musical tradition. Other Cuban genres were floating around at the same time, rumba, bolero, charanga, mambo, but son and its descendants proved to be the most popular. At the same time, the radio was changing how music was made, as it brought it to larger, non-live audiences, and Havana's status as a party capital, closely connected to the USA, encouraged the development of bands, who were partially inspired by those in America, and who played in nightclubs. Hundreds of sextets and septets, bands of six or seven members, were formed, and horns and piano were added to the existing percussion and vocals. Arsenio Rodriguez was fundamental in designing a new sound, as was his decision to move to New York. It was here that son would become salsa. Partially inspired by the Cuban Revolution, which brought musicians to the USA, partially by the pre-existing jazz tradition which existed there, and partially by the contact with immigrants from other Latin countries like Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic, salsa would develop, and become one of the most well-known Latin genres. At the same time, a subgenre also evolved, named Boogaloo. You probably know some of its most famous songs, such as Pete Rodriguez's I Like It Like That and Joe Cuba's Bang Bang. In 1964, a Dominican band leader named Johnny Pacheco founded Fania Records, an extremely influential record label which would release albums by almost all of the most important salsa musicians of the genre's boom years in the second half of the 20th century. I will list a few here, along with some of their best songs. There was Willie Colon with El Gran Varón and Gitana, Celia Cruz with La Vida es un Carnaval, Ruben Blades with Pedro Navanja and Maestra Vida, Hector Lavoe with Bonito Alemania and Aguanile, the second written together with Willie Colon. There are just so many great artists in their discography, and later they would sign musicians who would achieve fame outside of the world of Latin music, such as Carlos Santana. This new salsa took both the United States and Latin America by storm, and inspired new bands all over the region. One place where it really took off was Colombia. The city of Cali became known as the capital of salsa, and the musician Joe Arroyo became a national icon. His music is incredible. If you want to hear some, give Rebellion and Echo Palante a listen. Interestingly, salsa music actually crossed back over the Atlantic to West Africa, where it had its original roots. Musicians there found the rhythms instantly recognizable, yet, with its new influences, to them it sounded different and exotic. Bands like Orchestra Baobab and Star Band de Dakar started making salsa, changing it again, as the separated strands of music which originated from the region reunited, having gone in different directions in different continents over the intervening centuries. From the Caribbean coast of Colombia and Panama, which was then part of Colombia, as well as in the swamps surrounding Mompox inland, the genre of cumbia grew up among the region's African-descended population. This is defined by a shuffling three-part beat, which is incredibly infectious. Traditionally, it had a dance to go with it, one which is performed in pairs to represent a man's attempt to woo a woman. The primary instruments were percussion and various flutes, probably adopted from the indigenous peoples of the region. As I have said, all of these genres are a fusion of influences, and there are some that have argued that cumbia is in fact more indigenous than African. Picking all its features apart, however, I, and most ethnomusicologists, believe that the African element cannot be ignored. Toto La Mompasina's El Pescador is a good place to start if you want to hear some traditional cumbia. Armando Hernandez's La Zenaida and Aniceto Molina's renditions of traditional tunes like the cumbia Sampocena and the cumbia Cienaguera are all very good as well. Cumbia has been embraced in various parts of Latin America. It's particularly popular in Mexico, for example, where bands like Los Angeles Azules and the legendary Celso Piña started playing the genre. Que Nadie Sepa a Mi Sufrir by the first is good, and by the second, so is Cumbia Sobre el Rio and Cumbia Poder. Cumbia has also been adapted in a couple of interesting ways. In Peru, a genre known as chicha emerged in the 1960s, which took the cumbia rhythm, but which also drew influences from the psychedelic rock music, which was popular in the English-speaking world at the time, as well as indigenous Andean music. It came from the Amazon, and it has something of the jungle in it. Good examples include Cariñito by Los Hijos del Sol, La Danza de los Mielos by Los Mielos, and Sácalo, Sácalo by Los Diablos Rojos. Later, in Argentina, during the 1990s, young people from the poorer neighborhoods of Buenos Aires also adopted the rhythm. They sometimes combined live instrumentation with recently developed electronic programs in a similar way to their contemporary hip-hop artists in the USA to make a gritty, rough sound. It doesn't sound like hip-hop. It actually reminds me of the grime music which was being produced in London not long after, in that it comes from a similar social setting and has that bedroom, low-budget feel. Although, again, the overall sound is very different. I quite like it. Perhaps the best song I've heard is Que Calor by Los Pibes Choros. Moving away from cumbia, bachata is another important rhythm of African origin. It's one which grew up in the Dominican Republic. It is perhaps an offshoot of the son being played in neighbouring Cuba. It developed into something quite different, however. The rhythm is hard to describe. It's quiet compared to something like a pounding salsa, and it sort of stutters along, accompanied by guitar arpeggios. To begin with, it was a way for the rural poor to express the difficulties of daily life, and it has always retained an element of melancholy. As some of those people moved to the city, they took the genre with them, and it became the sound of the urban working class. This was the time of Trujillo's dictatorship, and he saw this very demographic as a dangerous potential source of resistance to his rule. Bachata was demonized, seen as coarse and unsophisticated by people higher up the social scale. It was suppressed and played in secret in bars and brothels. But when Trujillo died, it emerged and quickly became the defining genre of the nation. It spread beyond the Dominican Republic and is popular in parts of Central America and on the Ecuadorian coast. A commercialized version has also developed in the last 30 years, with some of its stars, like Romeo Santos and Aventura, becoming famous across Latin America for singing in a slightly poppy style. In my opinion, the best contemporary bachata musician by far, and one who has managed to stick to the genre's roots, is Juan Soriano. His songs, Vocales de Amor and Melina, are both excellent. Another extremely popular song from the 1990s was Monchi and Alexander's Hoja en Blanca. This is also definitely worth a listen. Finally, in this section on Afro-Latino genres, we have to talk about samba, Brazil's most famous musical export. Samba is a broad term for a variety of interpretations of the same basic rhythm. Its origins can be traced directly to the religious ceremonies brought to Brazil from Africa. It grew out of those candomblé rituals, which are still performed today, and percussion is still an important part of these. The relaxing bossa nova, which many people think of when they hear the word, is a type of samba, but it's only one type. At the other end of the spectrum, batucada, perhaps the loudest genre in existence, thanks to its percussion orchestras, is also another type of samba. It grew up in slightly different forms all over the country, wherever there was an Afro-Brazilian population, and it incorporated musical instruments from all the other cultures that this population encountered. These include Portuguese, indigenous, and even Arabic. Brazil is among the most multi-ethnic countries in the world, but it struggled to reconcile this and to come to terms with its identity. Historically, its leaders and upper classes have wanted to emphasize the Portuguese and wider European element of their cultural heritage, and also to suppress the others. While many people think of carnival and samba drumming as representative of Brazil, these things have only been embraced relatively recently. For most of history, samba was suppressed. The religions which it was connected to were viewed as threatening, and when slavery was legal, there was a fear that anything which promoted African culture and fostered a shared identity, and music is a good example of this, could lead to revolt. Samba parties were held in secret, and it was dangerous to host or attend them. Although prejudice against the music would continue, once slavery was ended, around the same time that samba was made legal, there was a huge influx of people into the cities. In the poorer neighborhoods of Rio de Janeiro, where some of these internal migrants ended up, during the early 20th century, what we today know as samba started to emerge from the disparate but related musical traditions of the countryside. Some of the religious traditions involved dance and music, which combined African traditions with Catholicism, and these evolved into the famous carnival. President Getúlio Vargas embarked on a campaign of national identity building in the 1930s and 40s. This was, of course, the era of nationalism in Europe, and following this lead, he became determined to bring together all the different elements which made up Brazil and to build a unified culture around which a nation could be properly constructed. He realized that this could not be done by pretending to be simply a European outpost in South America, and so he decided that among the cultural signatures which would define the country, samba music would have to be embraced. New genres like bossa nova emerged in the 1960s and achieved international success. This in turn created a traditionalist movement which sought to preserve the old musical forms of samba. After the military took control of the country in 1964, samba became a form of resistance, and so it changed again. MPB and Tropicália developed with a new sound and an anti-authoritarian message to go with it. Many of the most famous samba musicians were involved in this, including Jorge Ben, Caetano Veloso, and Gilberto Gil. Both Veloso and Gil were forced into exile in London for criticizing the government. Jorge Ben is easily one of my favorite musicians. Menina Mulher de Pele Preta, Carolina Bella, and Take It Easy, My Brother Charlie are some of his best songs. In more recent decades, Seals Jorge has perhaps become the most famous samba musician. Berger Sr., TV Rezao, and the intro music to the film City of God, which he also acts in, and which is named Convite para Vida, are all great songs of his. Bebetos, A Beleza e Você, Os Originais de Samba, song Falador Passa Mal, and of course Catola's Preciso Me Encontrar, should all also be listened to. Among the best songs of all time for me is the obscure Lotus 62 by Zé Roberto. In truth, though, you can't really go wrong with Brazilian music. Almost all of it is excellent. Next episode, we'll come back to look at some of the indigenous and European influence genres which make up Latin America's musical legacy. You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by Max Sargent. For more information, visit the website www.maxsargent.com/thehistoryoflatinamerica, and that's spelt MaxSergeant. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to get in contact at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com. You can also find the Facebook page by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. The Twitter handle is @historylatinam, and if you've liked the show, you can help out by leaving a review on iTunes. Alternatively, if you visit the website, you'll see that each episode is accompanied by relevant photos. Most of these are my own, taken during my time in Latin America. All these photos and more are available to purchase as prints at my Etsy shop. You can find this at www.etsy.com/maxsargentphoto. That's spelt www.etsy.com/maxsergeant photo. Thanks for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.